Hello, a very good evening to you. My name's David Jay. Welcome along to our July edition of Susie 103.4's Cricket Chat Show. Welcome to On the Front Foot. Our guests this evening are Robert Mitchell, chairman of the East Surrey Cricket Colts League, and then Mary Briggs and Maz Graham from Outward Blazes in the Women's Surrey Slam are going to join us after 8 o'clock. So we're getting a little way away from the overriding men's cricket. And you've probably noticed that there's quite a lot going on in the world of pro cricket just now, so plenty about that, possibly between now and 7.30, and certainly between 8.30 and 9. Our guest pundit this month is Andy Tharp from Mogadore Wanderers. Let's say good evening to Andy first.
Good evening, David. How are you?
It's very good to have you here. I'm warm, is the honest answer to your question.
I've come suitably dressed in shorts, so yes, hopefully I'll manage the evening.
Andy, how are the Mogs going on this season?
Oh, so far so good. We've won about 5 games, only lost 2 this year so far. So yeah, we've had some very good results, very good games. We had a cracking game against the Priory Cavaliers on Sunday where we won by 8 runs, so a very generous declaration on my part, and we managed to bowl them out with an over and a half to spare, so yeah, very good.
That's what it always ought to have been about, and still is, just occasionally.
Occasionally, yeah.
We'll come on shortly. There were one or two very, very tight league results last Saturday, but we'll talk about those. Reigate Priories wasn't amongst them.
No.
They rolled Sutton over. And any exciting new players at the Mogs?
Exciting new players? Well, we've got... we've had a few youngsters turn up and play for us this year, which has been very good to see. A few sons of old players, which is great. We had a gentleman called Rob Baxter from the hockey club play for us this weekend, and he kept wicket remarkably well. And then obviously there's the old stagers like myself and Peter Ferner, who still keeps on going at the age 71. But yeah, we're keeping going with the core team that we have.
Any new fixtures?
Well, we've got Cirencester on our tour, which will be a nice fixture. So we play them on the Friday, I think it's the 30th of July, and then we play Dumbleton on the Sunday. And we've got Blackheath in Surrey. Now, we were due to play them last year, but it got rained off. So this will be the first time that we've played them, so that will be a nice... It's a lovely cracking ground, Blackheath, so looking forward to going there.
Cirencester sounds as if they might be quite tasty. They're a fairly senior league side down there,
I believe so. So I think we're obviously playing a midweek game and the midweek team, so I think we'll see how strong they are, but yeah, we're going to go there and have some fun.
Yeah, I don't know the ground. I know Cirencester. There's lots of nice watering holes and restaurants and pubs and shops.
Yeah, I'm sure that we won't be just sport for choice on that respect.
It's a magnificent little country town. Well, that's good news, and next time we see you, will the tour have happened by then?
Probably, yes, because it's the end of July, so it depends on when I'm next due to come in, but yes, if it is after the tour, I'll
how long are you going for?
I'll say 3 days. We go...
Say only 3 days.
Only 3 days.
Long 3 days.
Well, we start off on the Thursday playing Priory in their cricket week.
Right.
We travel down on the Friday morning to play Cirencester, then we have a round of golf on the Saturday, and then we play Dumbleton on the Sunday, and then back on the Monday.
Very nice.
Yes.
Dumbleton is one of those villages which has specialised in village cup cricket and stuff over the years, and I actually went down there to see Merston play at Dumbleton day a number of years ago now, Andy, but it's part of the world I was very fond of. We used to take the school side down to Gloucester and Cheltenham, so that was always something quite special. Okay, well, that's the Mogs for now, and there isn't a great deal of club news this month, but I should let you know, we may have just mentioned the fact that Pam Wright from Hawley had died. I went to the funeral, which was in the middle of last month, and caught up with one or two of the old Hawley lags. Trevor Stevens, who we know well on this show, wasn't able to make it, but one or two of them there, and poor old Bernard. I'd got it slightly wrong. I didn't realise that Pam was 8 years younger than Bernard, who is 90, and poor old Bernard really was a shadow of his former self. It was a very sad occasion. I had to come in here to do the show, so I didn't actually hang around too long, but anyway, that was Pam Wright, and I'm sure that, she will be much missed, and everybody will remember her, not as a fragile elderly lady, but as all those wonderful cricket teas at Hawley in days gone by, you must have come across Bernard and Pam,
Andy. Yeah, definitely.
And of course, Bernard really and truly was Mr. Hawley Cricket Club for just about forever. And speaking of Hawley, and we must get the guy in, Tim, at some point. Somebody we all know we've had contact with in various contexts over the years. Chris Allen, known as Gubby when he was at school because somebody remembered that there was a George Oswald Browning Allen, Mr. MCC, for the better part of half a century, great mate of Jim Swanton's. So our Chris Allen became Gubby, and he came out of retirement to score his 20,000th run for Hawley.
Did he?
It's amazing, isn't it?
Wow.
20,000 runs, amazing.
Turned out three times for the Sunday Strollers down at Hawley, a couple of 50s and a 30.
I was going to say, how long had he been retired for? Because he came out of retirement and scored two 50s on the run.
3 years, I think.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
Now Chris turned up at the grammar school. I actually did some tutoring with Chris before he came. I did some entrance tutoring because I don't know if you did you ever come across the Perkinses, Andy? Jamie Perkins at Hawley, a bit before your time. Brian Perkins was our first tour fund chairman, and the Allens lived next door to the Perkinses, and I was recommended. So I actually knew Chris Allen before he came to the grammar school, but he fitted in very rapidly. I think he played for the first team when he was under 15, as did many of that lot. Todd Budgeon and Paul Downman and all of that crowd. And I actually have I've dug out here a report from the second to last game of the Jersey and Guernsey tour 1982. So to the final two games, two wonderful finishes, and to Chris Allen's unforgettable demonstration that he likes Guernsey, we struggled along in the second innings to 79 for 5, 7 an over needed for 10 overs, boarding house suppers in less than an hour. Enter Gubby. 61 out of 75, 28 out of the last 29 added, 7 fours, 50 in 43 minutes, a match-winning knock of the very highest caliber. I wrote that.
What year was that? That was 82, was it?
Long ago. That was when he would just have been coming up 18, because he's young in the year. Anyway, 20,000 runs for Hawley, and we still see him quite often, as you do, in one of our common watering holes, Andy. So we'll do our best to get Chris Allen in. He's the first team umpire.
Amazing. What a fantastic record, though, to come out of retirement and get 20,000 runs. And I think he scored two 50s, didn't he? Then in his he finally got to the landmark in his third inning. So amazing achievement. But there we go. Well worth it.
Well done him.
Yeah.
Tremendous arm. I think the longest arm I ever saw in local club cricket. He could virtually throw it from one end of Hawley to the other.
Yeah.
He went in for some national throwing the cricket ball competition. But one of the good guys as well.
Is he going to carry on playing, or is that him done now?
He said, I've got a veterans match to play, and if the club are short any time, I will play, but I don't want to stop other people from playing.
Well, if he's scoring 50s every weekend, he's welcome to play in most sides.
I think I might spit him next to look for watering holes if he wants to. Going for the marks,
I wouldn't be surprised if he could still hold his own in Hawley first team, to be quite honest with you. But there we are anyway. That's Chris Allen. Now Hawley going very well, because after their win last weekend, they are top of the Fullers Division 1 by 17 points, and Hawley 2s are heading the second 11 Division 1 by 7 points. So this is the halfway stage, Tim.
Yeah, doing well Hawley.
And possible contender for the OTFF Club of the Year.
Funny enough, I was thinking about that today,
Well, that's right. They are going. I haven't had a report from Outwood this week, so not sure what's occurring there. So that's Fullers Division 1. Newdigate, 5th in the Fullers Premiership. They're holding their own. 23 off the top, only 9 off 2nd. It's always very fluid, that Division 1.
Yeah, it's bunched up, isn't it? Yeah.
So they're going well in the Fullers. And in the Surrey Downs, South Nutfield are sailing away, having had a couple of years in the doldrums. Our correspondent Chris Walker was out for 98. But they beat Salfords by 200 and heaven knows how many runs last Saturday.
Yep.
And they're 23 points clear of East Horsley, so that's good to
know. Do we know how he was dismissed on 98?
Caught on the boundary. And he said it surprised the fielder more than it surprised him. So
what a shame.
So there we were. Premiership. Banstead have had their moments, but they're fifth with 86 points. They lost that game against East Molesey, 280 for seven, I think they posted, and East Molesey got them for nine with three balls to spare. So an amazing game. The Llamas, 17 points clear at the top now, eight straight wins.
Yeah, you'd like to think that they're there now, wouldn't you?
Well, you just never know, do you?
No, well, I think East Molesley are quite... they're not far behind them, and they've only lost once.
Suppose. We're only in July, aren't we?
They are, and you think you look at what happened to them last year, where they were, you know, streets ahead at this time, and
that's true.
Imploded. So,
and the Surrey Championship isn't halfway till next week because they started a week later. So anyway, that's the Priory. This Michael Mundy, who I didn't realise had played a bit of pro cricket and then went to Horsham and then came to the Priory, got another eight for.
Yes,
he got one for 64 and took seven for 10 thereafter and finished up with 8 for 74.
Yeah.
Sutton were rolled. Absolutely marmalised. Division 2 Dorking hanging on a bit in second. 109 to Bank of England with 119. Chepstow Coolstone. Well, Countians on the comeback, 101. And they're just 1 point ahead of Stoke Dabernon. So, Mocks play at any of those?
We used to play Chipston and Causden, Royal Countians, because Jamie Freeland was a long-time member at Chipston, so we played there for a long time. We've played Stoke Dabernon once, I think, in a conference fixture. I used to play them a lot when they were in the Fullers League against Merstham.
I didn't bring the cutting with me, but speaking of Merstham, I see that Chipsy Coolsden and Wall Countians had a fun six asides last weekend,
right.
And the Old Rigations won it again. Now, this is Ben Snelling from Merstham and Ollie Tame, and they turned up with four. They had to borrow two from Chipstead, and they won the thing. So that really is a bit of an aside. At Merstham, at Division 5, 8th on 74, at least they're 24 points clear of the drop zone, but not having it all their own way. At least they've survived. Merrow, who were their great box and cocks in the top of the Fullers, have gone down, and I think it looks as if they're staying down. So good luck to Laurie Nicholson and his lads there. So that's...
We'll have to get Laurie to come in, won't we? Because we haven't seen him for... I think he didn't come in last year, did he, Laurie? It was the year before that we
had... He might have been here last year. The trouble is, Tim, you're filling us up with so many wonderful guests that there isn't space for all of our regulars.
Is I try and get the guests scheduled in as quickly as I can to try and fill up gaps. And I assume when I email people and contact people that not everybody will respond. And recently it feels like every time I message somebody, that, I'd love to come on, and all of a sudden I've got a massive backlog of guests I've got to try and fit in somewhere. So.
This is a chat show that's heading firmly in the right direction, although still no success with Ebony Rainford Brent.
No, not yet.
Moving onward, or downward really, to Sussex. Now, East Grinstead, they're a middle of the table side again now after that one winning season. They're fifth, 151 points. Three Bridges promoted this season. They're in the danger zone. They're ninth with 136. But Horsham are six, and they're only 7 points ahead. So that's absolutely everything to play for there. Ifield struggling. I saw Ifield at Burgess Hill when they were on for a win, and the weather intervened, and they just can't buy a win, poor old Ifield. They were smashed out of the Premiership last year, and they're now ninth in Division 2. So 14 behind Chichester Priory Park, and then it's a long way to seventh. So, fingers crossed, really, for Ifield. Division 3 East, Crawley Eagles only seventh, and they're just seven above the drop zone. West Division 4, Crawley are fifth with 188, and Felbridge and Sunnyside sixth on 186. And there was another one of those last over finishes for Felbridge, and Crawley actually tied with, I think it was Slinfold, but I'm open to correct. And that was 202 each in a 45 overs game.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's a lot of the local clubs in the mix there, aren't there, really?
There are.
Sort of around the potentially might do well, but as you said earlier on, it's still a long way to go. I mean, I was maybe a little bit optimistic in assuming that Reigate Priory are going to win the title at this point in the year, but it feels like we're much further in this. Because of the amount of cricket, I guess, we've had on the TV and stuff, we're much further along in the season.
It does feel like that way, yeah.
But as you say, the leagues do move around a lot, don't they? I mean, you only need a decent run, three or four game run, before you know it, you can jump up either way.
Lots of bunched up middles, mm, yes, and if I may say so, lots of bunched up bottoms. Am I allowed to say that?
Oh, you just have, David.
Well, there we are. So, you know, the whole thing could be stood on its head,
yeah,
in another 9 matches' time, mm, where we're halfway through the season. And speaking of the season as a whole, there's been so much at World Cup fever and Women's Ashes fever and so on and so forth, which we will no doubt get round to discussing between 8:30 and 9, that it's been very easy to neglect the fact that there are 3 rounds of county championship, mm, cricket going on at the moment as the World Cup comes to an end, and then the Blast for its it's not its final year, is it? The Blast is going to run alongside the 100, yes. God bless its little cotton socks.
Yeah, we'll see how long that lasts, but yes.
Manchester Originals, anybody?
Is that what they're going to start?
Manchester Originals, I read in the paper,
really?
Yesterday.
Why?
Oh, yes.
Why Manchester Originals?
No idea, but that's how it's going to be. And most of the coaches are going to be Australian, we understand, including Darren Lehman, God bless his little cotton socks.
Mm, great. Well, of course, don't give him any sandpaper, anyway.
Darren Lehman's boy, when he's not busy playing for Lancashire, is at Reigate Priory at the moment, along with Rhys Topley and half a dozen other people.
Have you seen that Rhys Topley just signed for Sussex today?
Yeah.
Did he?
Yeah.
Signed for Sussex.
Well, good for him, because I mean, he is an England player, like it or lump it. He's had a run of bad luck with injury. Yeah. His dad had a run of bad luck with the Thought Police, and we'll get round to discussing that in one of these shows, but probably not tonight. So, Surrey just can't get it together, can they?
No, that was quite a dramatic final day, though, wasn't it?
It was.
You know, I mean, they're playing Yorkshire, and they've been unlucky this season, really. They've never really got going, have they?
No, they haven't. And you look at the game at Scarborough. I mean, the first 3 innings, both teams scoring about 320, 350, and in the fourth inning, Surrey were 100 odd for the loss of one, maybe two, thinking, this is game on.
Yeah.
And then you check back about half an hour later and we've lost 4 or 5 wickets. You're thinking,
how did that happen?
They lost all 10 for 101.
Yeah.
So, and, what can you do when it's like that? But the Yorkies are up there, they're in third place, and Essex put the brakes on Somerset, who had been running away with it.
Yeah.
But, and they both won in the round of matches that's just finished. So
Somerset are looking good.
Somerset 143 and Essex 127 at the top.
Close.
And Surrey 80. And uncomfortably close to those bottom reaches, but I imagine it'll just be 1 out of 8 to go down.
Well, it is.
Yeah. Eight and ten. The whole thing. Don't get me started. Sussex weren't just beaten; they were thumped by Northants.
Yeah, that was in both innings. They were dreadful, weren't they?
393 runs, and they were out for 110 both times.
Yeah,
under 110.
It was 106 first innings, 105 second innings.
Well,
dreadful.
Yeah, they're dreadful. Still third out of 10 in Division Two. I felt a bit sorry for our old pal Will Beer, who I think Salt was injured, and they've obviously had some other injuries. And Will Beer, having played something like 18 first class games in 11 seasons, I think, pressed into service as a makeshift opener and out for 97. An innings that took absolutely forever. It was about 7 hours, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a long innings. What a shame to get all that way as
Yes, exactly. I feel sorry for him, don't
you? Yeah, exactly. 97. You said Sussex has signed Rhys Topley. They've also signed Varun Chopra from Essex. Essex batsman on a three-match loan deal. Not particularly long, but apparently he's going to be available for some of the county championship games against Northants, Lancashire, and then the friendly against Australia A. So Sussex trying to bolster their players there.
I do want to talk a little bit in the final half hour about the ICC T20 World Cup, which Jersey have qualified into the next round for. But just in passing, it seems to me that our pal Jonty Jenner from Jersey was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. I reckon he'd have had a good solid crack at getting into Sussex first,
definitely,
the way it is this season.
Definitely. There is definitely a gap there, isn't there, for him to sort
there, into. There would have been, and he's scratching around trying to get games at other counties. I see the name Hudson Prentice making 100 for Derbyshire. I'm presuming that's Finn Hudson Prentice from East Grinstead. I shouldn't imagine there's too many of those around.
Exactly. Right. I didn't see that, I have to say.
But I didn't have a chance to research that.
Was he not playing in the Surrey Championship this season as well?
I really don't know. Did he switch out of East Grinstead?
I think he switched out of East Grinstead, played in the Surrey Championship for...
Okay.
I think it was Banstead or one of those Premier League side, and got his...
Didn't know that.
Whatever happened to club loyalty, gentlemen?
Long gone.
And we've got just a couple of minutes, so let's do it now. Let's just spend 2 minutes on this business of a public figure and a private life. What about Alex Hepburn? It's ancient history now, but getting jailed for 5 years for that internet sex scandal when they were more or less totting up notches on the bedpost, but doing it on social media. And one would think that Joe Clark has got pretty badly tainted by association.
Yeah, very, very difficult, isn't it? And it's it didn't read particularly well when you read the newspapers on the story. It's always those stories are difficult to read. And when it's about, you know, professional sportsmen, it makes it even worse when you think they have so much to lose. It's just awful.
I think the point I've made many, many times is that Dennis Compton and Bill Edrich and Keith Miller didn't have to contend with an antagonistic press, never mind social media,
The
paparazzi and the whole thing, and different times. Now, it may very well be that there was an undue amount of privilege accorded to England players 60 or 70 years ago. Who is to say? People seem to think that for all his scrapes, Ian Botham remained a charismatic English bulldog who they would support through thick and thin. I think many felt like that about Kevin Peterson, didn't they?
Yeah.
Although perhaps not quite so many.
I don't think Peterson had quite the sort of, I don't think charisma is the right word, the draw that Botham had, where people warmed to him a bit more. I think Peterson always tended to push people away rather than draw them to him, but it does make you wonder how the likes of Botham and so on would have coped in a world of social media and people with smartphones. You know, I mean,
I think it's a very good point you make, Tim. I mean, I think they'd struggle.
I think Botham really probably thanks his lucky stars every day that he didn't have to play professional cricket.
And it makes you wonder, doesn't it, what education and training these guys are given in terms of how to not behave, but, you know, just what to be careful of. And
I just wonder, Botham being Botham, whether he would even have engaged with social media or simply risen above it. I think, you know, when Tim Hudson was his manager, Tim Hudson would have engaged with it.
But I
wonder whether Vivian Richardson, Botham and Garner, you know, would have we don't know, do we? Anyway, there we are. It's unfortunate when there are scandals. There are so many pitfalls, aren't there? And you're so much in the public eye, and
it's difficult. I mean, and you alluded to it just a moment ago. We're with media training these days. I mean, the likes of both of them stuff would have never had media training. Even you know, they were sort of coming through post Packer. Even those guys had zero, I would have thought, media training. As you said, both of them hooked up with Tim Hudson and maybe had a little bit of sort of media training, if you want to call it that, but not like they do today. But then you would have thought all these players must have some sort of basic media training that they go through, yet they never seem to learn from it. They seem to think they're immune from it, and they get caught out.
Are we agreed that the public figure must still be entitled to a private life?
Oh yeah, definitely. They are entitled to a private life, but equally, if you're going to trade on that persona and you're going to earn a living and make a decent living from it, you have to be aware that your life is never really going to be private.
And of course, this case in point now has involved conviction for a serious criminal offence.
Exactly. You know, if you break the law, you have to face the consequences.
Yeah, exactly.
On which note, let's take a break.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the second section of this evening's On the Front Foot, the July edition thereof. Tim Bowling, Andy Tharp and David Jay with you. And it's my pleasure now to welcome Robert Mitchell, who is actually wearing two hats, one of which we hadn't anticipated. Rob, good evening. Welcome to the studio here at Suzy 103.4.
Thank you. Pleased to be here.
It's absolutely lovely to see you here. And the initial reason that we asked you to come was to talk to us about the East Surrey Colts League. We have a varying amount of coverage here of the Colts. Hawley in particular are very, very good at sending us Colts details. Some clubs are better than others. But you've told Tim the league was formed 27 years ago. How long have you been involved yourself?
I've been involved myself now for about half of that time. I got involved when the team that I was helping to look after applied, and I've been there ever since.
And how long did it take you to rise to the heights of the chair?
I served as vice chairman for a couple of years and then stepped in when the previous chairman moved on, so not very long.
And tell me, is it a great oak that grew from little acorns?
It's doing quite nicely as far as that's concerned, yes. Having started, as you say, 27 years ago with one age group, it's blossomed, it's had fruit, and expanded very nicely. We've had new clubs come in almost every year.
And looking at the incredibly impressive and colourful chart that you sent us of past winners and age groups and all the different clubs that are involved, can you give us a brief rundown of what those age groups are this season and how many clubs are involved now?
Certainly. We start with the under eights, and that is an age group which is growing every year. And we go all the way through up to under 17s, and at that age group it's a little bit harder to get so many teams involved. And the breadth of those teams covers rural Surrey and up north of the M25 as well.
You've got one or two from outside the county, haven't you?
That's right. Being on the East Surrey side, we attract people from West Kent and also from North Sussex.
That's a bit the same way as Outwood play in the County
right,
Village League, rather than than coming westward for their league cricket. Now, what's involved? When does the administrative season start for you chaps on the committee?
We have a brief period of respite through, I would say, September and October, and then we start having our meetings to discuss what went well in the previous year, whether there are any proposals to adapt our rules to suit the member clubs, and then it gets really busy as far as the fixture secretaries are concerned from early January and through for a couple of months.
And is that done at an individual club level? Is that club fixture secretaries speaking to one another, or do you centralise the fixtures?
No. When you leave it to clubs to organise their own fixtures, you find all sorts of fixtures that just never take place, and lots of argy-bargy. So they are all the league fixtures are set in stone, and all the cup fixtures early on are set in stone, and then thereafter there are play-by dates.
The league structure and the cup structure run alongside one another?
Yes, they do. Some clubs which are very inclusive and have got fairly large squads may, for example, rotate their players regularly, and the league is therefore less important, and they might concentrate on putting their strongest sides into the cup, for example.
If I asked you what the rationale is behind running and managing a Colts league, what's the underlying purpose, do you think?
So if I speak from my personal experience, when we at Lingfield had started our junior section, our Colts section, we were always having difficulty finding fixtures with any other clubs and getting the same sort of standard and agreeing what rules we were going to be playing by. So by coming into leagues, all of that is set and everybody knows what's expected of them.
And what about financing a structure of this size?
It's actually remarkably easy. We set off with £1,000. We still have our £1,000. We charge each club that enters £50 to enter, regardless as to how many teams they put in. And the only expenditure that we have really is our annual trophies and medals.
So self-financing, hugely successful. Have you got, thinking back over the time that you've been involved, have you got any favourite moments that spring to mind by way of recall?
We've had some very thrilling matches. We've also had some very entertaining situations, such as when an umpire was standing at the bowler's end. The bowler, yes, he did happen to be his son, and it was a very good delivery, and the umpire appealed and then realised what he'd done.
Oh dear. What was the upshot of that then?
I was standing at square leg actually at that
did you have
day.
To overrule?
He apologised just to all and sundry.
These things are sent to try us. Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? How do you find at Colts level the standard of officiating varies? Is it reasonably constant?
It's a thankless job sometimes organising it, particularly for clubs that have got a number of age groups, finding enough people to go round. One of the other problems that we obviously have is when to play all the fixtures. You can't get everything because of the space that's required all at weekends, so we have to play in the evenings. That means that you need usually parents who are able to get away from work. And I've known umpires who've had to be doing the scoring while they're umpiring because there just aren't the people available.
Do you find it frustrating that the season sort of ends as the school holidays kick in, or is it a respite for you that it's all over?
No, it's all too short.
Yeah.
It really is. There's a big difference from the school holidays because quite a lot of cricket is played in the fee-paying schools, and they break up that much earlier than some of the state schools do. And we set our season to finish at the end of July, when the schools break up. But in actual fact, some clubs are already losing players off on holiday from the end of June onwards.
I think that's been the case in schools cricket too, ever since the last major examination revamp and the advent of very, very cheap mass participation package holidays, even for 16-year-olds, never mind the 18-year-olds, post-exams. Gone are the days when everybody hung around to do a month's worth of activities at school and so on. It must be very satisfying for you to fill this void, much though we may regret it. It's a sad fact that in the state system, cricket is often close to non-existent for boys and girls. It must be very satisfying for you to fill that void to such a vast extent.
I'm glad to say that's actually recognised by the governing body, the ECB, and they looked at the statistics, and they still do, and one of the initiatives that they've started in the last 3 years is the All-Stars programme to try to get children playing at a very, very early age.
Yeah. And are you involved in any way with initiatives like Chance to Shine?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Yes, several of the clubs that take part in the league also run the Chance to Shine in their local schools.
There's lots going on. At the moment, if I'm right, you haven't got a discreet girls' competition, but a lot of girls play in mixed sides. Is that right?
Yes, that's absolutely right. We allow girls to play down as far as their age group is concerned to encourage them to play more, but quite often the standard of girls cricket these days is so good that they don't need to.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a number of examples this year where girls are more than capable of holding their own with their peer boys.
In terms of the amount of girls that are playing, how quickly have you seen that grow over the last few years? And presumably there's a lot there. You've said there's more girls.
The last
girls
two
playing.
Years have been particularly significant, and I understand that is partly because cricket has replaced rounders on the curriculum for a number of schools.
Okay.
So yes, we are seeing that. We're also seeing it as part of this initiative, the All-Stars cricket. That's bringing in a lot of girls. I don't know exactly what the ratio is, but
And England winning the World Cup probably helped as well.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, that publicity.
Coverage.
Yeah, exactly. Much more coverage. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Right.
No doubt we'll be talking later about England's potential failure not to win the current Ashes series.
Well,
but we'll see how all that goes. I mean, clearly the World Cup was a tremendous thing, and I've said this many times on the show, but I think the growth and development of professional women's cricket has been the best thing that's happened to the game in the last however long it is, 4 or 5 years. I have to ask, having touched now on women's cricket, and women's cricket most of the time being reasonably well-mannered, does the league committee ever finding itself sitting in judgment on dispute or disciplinary?
Yes, but I'm glad to say not that often.
What sort of bones of contention might arise, do you think?
So we had to change our rules a couple of years ago, and this was on the basis that we try to make the cricket progressive. So, for example, when they start playing at eight, they play in pairs, and every time somebody is out, they lose four runs. As they get older, that penalty for losing your wicket becomes greater. Then when we get onto standard form cricket, 11 aside, when you're out, as they say, we start off by having batsmen retiring after they've scored a certain number of runs to increase the opportunity for participation.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that retiring starts off at 25 and then goes up to 30 and then to 40. So we found that there were a couple of teams who were perhaps trying to take advantage of the situation, and people were deliberately trying to get out so that the batsman who had retired could come back in. And then you'd find that a side was deliberately trying not to get a batsman out because somebody else would come back in. Obviously not terribly sporting, no. Not, as they say, in the spirit.
The pundits, I think yesterday after the England game, were all laying into the World Cup being potentially decided on net run rate. Quite honestly, whatever set of rules and regs you've got, somebody's going to be upset because it hasn't quite tilted in their direction, aren't they? But
yeah, I think Jonathan Agnew was, I heard him on TMS grumbling about the net run rate thing, but you know, it is what it is. Back in 92, everyone was grumbling about the rain affected games then, so you know, you can't win.
What goes around, I suspect. And
we all know the rules when we enter a competition.
Exactly.
Or we should.
Yes, that's right.
Precisely so. In terms of, dare I say it, discipline and behaviour, from the distance of your committee level, are parents more likely to be committed and supportive of the competition than they are to be difficult and combative?
Sometimes, yes. We probably have more disciplinary problems with parents than we do with the actual children themselves.
Is that a really big problem, though?
No.
I mean, you know, you look at some football sort of tournaments. I remember with my kids going to football tournaments, and there were some serious problems, even in the few that I went to. But yeah, I can't imagine there's huge amounts of. It's still played in the right spirit, is it?
Generally speaking,
yeah.
It is.
Yeah, watched in the right spirit, should I say.
Yes.
Watched in the right spirit,
yes.
Yeah.
And I suppose one of the difficulties that you face is that, from my perspective, long involvement with schools cricket, it's absolutely right and proper in junior cricket that both umpires do a bit of suggesting and advising. I don't say coaching, I don't say go round the wicket and bowl it at him or whatever, but, you know, if they're 10, 11, 12 years old, they need guidance, don't they? It doesn't just come there anyway.
That's something that we do cover in our rules and guidelines as well. So progressively the umpire is supposed to have less of a coaching role. Obviously when they're very, very young, they may be playing their first game, they may not even know which way round to hold the bat, they may not be paying much attention when they're fielding, which can be dangerous, and therefore the umpire needs to have a much greater involvement.
Absolutely. Yeah.
By the time they've got to 13, we would expect the umpire to be only applying those sort of guidance from a safety point of view,
sure,
and not improving the cricket.
Sure. I haven't even opened it yet, let alone read it, but this very evening in my inbox from the Umpires Association is the ECB's recommendations for junior format in future. I've got some wind of what some of that is going to be, and I shudder to think what it might do, but anyway, let's let that one lie, Tim, until...
Yes. Be very happy to talk about that another time, because I'm on one of the working group committees.
Okay. It's fascinating. I just wonder, babies and bathwater, but anyway, I haven't even digested it yet. Now, you gave us some information, Rob, and the East Surrey Colts League is but one of several in this part of the world, leagues that is, and you indicated that there may be some merger proposals in the future?
That's right. There's a proposal that Surrey have put out, which the various leagues are all working together on. It's a little bit to do with standardisation, but it's mostly to do with trying to make sure that there's enough opportunity at whatever level somebody wants to play. Surrey have just appointed somebody to try to coordinate that.
In a way, this is the opposite end, Tim, from Matt Camp's Surrey
Yes,
Slam.
Well, funnily enough, I was thinking
bringing
about
adults
yeah,
back
when,
in.
When Rob was sitting here talking, and it did actually, Matt Camp was in my mind as to how you know, different sort of groups have to try and run different types of leagues. And, you know, clearly Matt's is a marketing-driven league, and he's done fantastically well. And obviously, the East Surrey Colts League, I guess, is at the other end with getting the youngsters in, and I guess you don't have to do huge amounts of marketing because clubs want to belong to the league.
That's right.
Yeah.
And the rules that we operate are the ones that the clubs themselves have voted for and want. So it's not tops-down at all.
Yeah.
It is proposed, gets discussed, and so each league at the moment has adjusted its format to suit its member clubs.
Yeah, which is important to keep the future of it going, isn't it, really?
That
everybody buys into the whole ethos and the whole how it's set up and the laws and the rules of it.
That's right,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
What you just said about allowing youngsters to go on playing at a level they are happy with is so important, isn't it?
Yeah,
because sooner or later they're going to be the people who do come back round to playing adult
sure.
cricket of some sort, even if it's T20 and the Slam in the evenings. Well, I hope that the standardisation and potential amalgamation goes well. I'm sure it will. I suppose in these days of IT, Tim, it's not as difficult as it would have been for somebody like the East Surrey Colts League or the Surrey Slam to administer these things, as was once
yeah.
the case.
Yeah, I mean, we touched
telephone
on this,
calls,
didn't we?
Scraps of paper.
Exactly.
And
it's much. I mean, I remember even sort of 25 years ago trying to just keep one team together, let alone run an entire league. And it's not easy when you've only got the telephone to try and do it. Now it is easier with the internet, but with that I guess comes extra problems as well. But it means communication is better, but clearly it's still a big task that you have to run every year.
So our president, who is very good at turning up at all our cup finals and presenting all the awards and medals, isn't on email. So I did have a 45-minute conversation with him last night, just letting him know how the various semi-finals are progressing, what the final dates are going to be, and therefore which grounds he's likely to have to turn up to and when.
So is that a conscious decision by him not to get email, or just he just doesn't fancy using it?
He's quite set in his ways.
Which is understandable.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We all have our glass ceiling
exactly.
at some point up
yeah.
the building of IT, don't we? And I mean, I know where I'm banging up against the top, and I've no desire to break through at all. You mentioned your president. Would you like to quickly mention your other committee members?
Yes, absolutely.
Please
because
do.
They are very, very important. So Tony Parrott, who comes from Caterham Club, is the president. He was previously the chairman. Jim Harmer from Reigate Priory does an excellent job as deputy chairman, and he looks after most of our rules. David Ackland is the fixture secretary from Woodmanstone Club and does an amazing job at trying to feed everything into the grids. And Lisa from Dorking took over as secretary recently, and handles most of the communication now.
And they've had their mention on the airwaves tonight. Jim Harmer we know very well,
yes,
indeed, for
indeed.
All manner of reasons, going back almost to the year dot, because we've all got...
So you know him as well, Andy, don't you, Jim Harmer?
I know Jim very well.
various Reigate connections, and I grew up in Caterham, so I've known various Parrots. It was David Parrott who played a bit of Colts cricket all those years ago for us up there. But yes, it's amazing how names crop up. I expect, Andy, you've seen this lad Dombrandt, who's in the running for the England rugby squad.
Oh, yes, I have.
Well, now, the Dombrandts have been famous in Netherland cricket particularly, but Caterham cricket as well. Again, going back to when I was 5 years old.
Wow.
That's a very, very, very long time now.
Yeah.
We've got just a couple of minutes, Rob, because I'm sure you can come back and talk to us again about how the league has wrapped up and how things are going forward. But we did mention Lingfield before we started. If you can encapsulate anything you have to say about Lingfield in about 2.5 minutes, please go ahead.
So like lots of clubs in the country, we claim to be one of the oldest. We can actually trace back to 1728 when the gentlemen of Lingfield beat the gentlemen of London, and Lingfield Cricket Club played at the Oval before Surrey ever did. So there are a couple of little snippets. We've been through the archives. we were going through a very poor period in the early 90s. We were down to running one Saturday and one Sunday side, and through the youth section we've been able to increase. 3 years ago we were actually putting out six sides occasionally on a Saturday. We weren't able to sustain that, but we do run four league sides on a Saturday, two in Surrey and two of them in the Sussex League. Sitting on the borders, we're able to do that.
You had quite a strong youth section for a while, didn't you, there, which presumably you've now built on.
That's right. Yes.
And a nice ground, I think, from memory. I don't think I've ever played at Lingfield.
No, I don't think I've played there.
Been there to watch, certainly. Yeah.
Have you played there, Andy?
No, I have, sir.
Well, we're very fortunate now in having three grounds available, because Newchapel and Hall.
Oh, I've played there many times, yeah.
And they, we tried to keep them going, lending them players, and in the end they said, look, just here's the ground, you use it, which is why we play our two Sussex League fixtures there, and then the two Surrey ones use the main ground in Lingfield on Godston Road.
Newchapel and Horns, a bit like South Nutfield. You stand there and you think, I can hit it out of here four times out of six. You never hit a six at Newchapel and Horn. They had a very elderly chap called Bill Jones who ambled in off about two paces. He must have been 60 at the time. Chucked it right up in the air.
Oh, I can't stand those.
Wickets after. Where's your other ground?
It's on the road from Lingfield to East Grinstead. It's the Felcourt ground.
It used
to be the Rentokil ground. And we now lease that from Scandiahus, and we have a non-turf pitch on there, which is used for a lot of junior games.
And you're in the Fuller's Premiership?
We are. For the last 5 years, we have finished third, thus managing to avoid promotion so far.
I think Newdigate were quite gleeful about rolling you over
last Saturday. Week,
but let's just draw a line underneath that. Robert Mitchell, chairman of the East Surrey Cricket Colts League, it's flown by. It's been an absolute delight talking to you, and we hope we'll see you again on the front foot.
Thank you very much indeed.
Now, that's the first hour of On the Front Foot for this July edition. Andy is now going to take a seat even further back, because we have two guests coming in for the next half hour. Tim's going to stay in the co-presenter's chair, and Mary Briggs and Mariana Maz Graham from the Outward Blazes are going to join us. It's been a real pleasure to have Robert. We've really only scratched the surface of the East Surrey Colts, but no doubt there will be an opportunity to talk about that and more indeed about Lingfield in times to come on the front foot. Welcome back to the second hour of On the Front Foot here at Suzy 103.4, our monthly cricket chat show. My name's David J. Tim Bowling's the other side of the desk, and Andy Tharp currently hovering somewhere in the background, but he'll be back with us at 8.30 after our next pair of guests. Before I do anything else, I must thank Jeff from Hawley for his telephone call earlier. Delighted to hear your comments about baseball and a long train journey explaining the fundamentals of cricket to a US person who was here from Germany to have a look at the baseball. We are going to have a look at a number of things if we can squeeze them into that final half hour, but I'm delighted to say that we have guests with us. That's Mariana, a.k.a. Maz Graham, and Mary Briggs, and they're from Outward Blazes, who made their debut in the Surrey Slam. A very good evening and welcome to our Suzy Radio studio, first and foremost, to Mary Briggs from Outward Cricket Club. Mary, welcome.
Hello.
It's very good to have you here, and a little further away, but I can just about see you in the distance, Mariana, a.k.a. Maz Graham.
G'day.
It's lovely to have you here. Did that greeting suggest to me that you might not have originated round here?
That's right.
Whereabouts, then?
Melbourne.
Okay. Well, it's a big place, they tell me. I've got friends there, but I've never managed to quite get that far. Now, Mary, you are occupying the seat, which at one point was going to be occupied by Laura Yent. And do please tell us about Laura and how she's become a leading light, whether she's done that in her own right or purely because she's Phil's partner and Phil is sort of Mr. Outwood Cricket Club, and really and truly how the whole thing with the Blazers and the Surrey Slam got underway.
Well, it got underway because Outwood Cricket Club is a very active cricket club with lots of different levels of teams, and Phil was part of the organisation, and I think it'd be true to say Laura was a bit of a cricket widow, where Phil was spending a lot of time at the cricket club, and then there were a number of us who had husbands, partners, friends who were playing an awful lot of cricket, and we weren't, and suddenly over, I suspect, a few glasses of wine one evening came out the idea of, well, why don't we have a go?
I suppose there are two ways of going at this, aren't there? There's the school of thought that says never marry a cricketer, and the other one says if you can't beat them, join them, and it's the second route that you guys have gone down.
Definitely the join them route, yes.
So, a few glasses of wine, and sounded like a good idea at the time. What happened next?
So a group got together and started off. We decided to go straight into hardball, which I think was fairly brave, and we had a lot of support from husbands, partners, people within the club, and we just got out there, got playing, and started playing against some other local teams, and sort of have found our way through various different leagues to try and find the right level. Most of us had never played before. But then we managed to attract a couple of people who had played, which I think really helped because, you know, you learn from each other. But we've always been extremely inclusive. The founding members, I'd say, were mostly in their 50s and had never played before. But then we attracted a few youngsters, so we've got everything from teenagers all the way up to sort of in our 50s and 60s. And over the last couple of years, we have improved a lot, and we thoroughly enjoy ourselves, take a good mixture of bit of competitive, but an awful lot of fun with it.
Well, I suppose fun is in the final analysis what it always should be about. But it's not just fun, is it? We'll talk to Maz about the slam and what that entails shortly. But I must ask, because I think Phil told us, and then Laura, as I say, was going to dot the I's and cross the T's. You've been on tour already.
Oh, yes, we've been to Spain earlier this year. That came about through a softball tournament the number of us played in last year, and then one of the teams that was there said that they'd been to it last year in La Manga, and what fun it had been. So Laura, in her truly enthusiastic way, put out to all of us in the club, would we like to form a group together, and 16 of us headed out to the softball tournament in May.
Did you take partners with you, or was it just girls?
No, it was a girls only tour.
Blimey, can you imagine that?
were you involved in this, Maz?
Yeah, I was involved.
Yep. Were you indeed? So there was a distinct Aussie flavour to the activities on and off the field. I dare say. Now, our background, we've all of us been involved with the grammar school in Reigate in many ways over many years, Andy and Tim and my good self, and there's always been the second law of touring is what goes on tour stays on tour. But could you give us a flavour of the matches that you played, and the perhaps the sort of social itinerary that was arranged for you?
Indeed. Well, from a matches point of view, it was quick cricket, so it was but the six overs that you played in on each innings, so it was very, very quick, and you went, it was pairs cricket, so it was fast and furious, sort of the equivalent of 2020 sped up even more, and we played over 2 days. We played all of the teams within the tournament. We actually had two outward teams, so we played against each other and against all the other teams, including there was a Welsh team, there was a Spanish team, there were a whole variety of teams that we played against, and then there was sort of knockout from, you know, winners and losers against each other. So that was, from a cricket point of view, good fun. And then we organised the social side, was just as important, really. It was very flexible, different people flying out and back at different times to maximise their availability. And there was the swimming pool at La Manga, so we were able to do that. We had quite a group of runners. We went out to the restaurants in the evening. I'd say a little bit of alcohol was indeed drunk.
Plentiful supplies of food and drink are at least 50% of what any worthwhile tour is all about.
Right, right.
Andy's not on a microphone at the moment, but as a veteran of many tours, he could he could tell you that. And he's smiling away in the background over there. I mean, if anybody wanders, Mogador wanderers wander. But that's absolutely splendid. Of course, going back a long time, he's not been there for a while now, but P.I. Pocock, Percy Pocock from the Oval, was a big noise at La Manga at one point. Mm-hmm. Tried to twist our arms to go out there.
Have you ever been
no.
to La Manga?
No.
You've been there. It's meant to be incredibly well set up for that whole sporting tour. Is it really as good as everybody says?
I think so. I mean, I certainly know of people who've gone for the tennis and for the golf. There were lots of people playing golf there, and I know it was very well set up. Our tournament within it was very well organised, which made it fantastic. You know, from our point of view, we just had to turn up and play. But no, it was very well. We'll definitely be going again next year.
Yeah.
And we all agreed that we wanted to go there. We had lovely weather when we were there, and it made it very special.
I find it fascinating how people assume that tournaments just happen when in fact only the very best tournaments just happen, where there's a very, very high degree of organisation cross-checking.
Yeah, I mean, we were just talking to Robert, weren't we? And we've had Matt Camp in before, and the amount of work that clearly Robert does and Matt Camp does in all their respective tournaments. They don't just happen. There is a huge amount of background work that goes on to get them going so that the teams can turn up and play and have a great time. And clearly you did have a great time there.
Maz, we've just mentioned the Sari Slam. How's it been? And how's the local rivalry with South Nutfield?
It's been good, actually. It's been coming from having played cricket in Australia to playing cricket over here. It's been a learning experience. It's definitely slightly different to what I'm used to. But it's very competitive, but also very friendly. So, you know, so the South Nutfield people have been quite good to us and quite nice to us. So there's always good friendship there.
Well, when you're only just up the road, it must be difficult to be absolutely tooth and nail about it. Hasn't quite gone all your own way in competitive terms in the Slam, I think.
No, not necessarily. But I don't think that's a bad thing. I think the club is still a relatively young and new club. And I think you also have to appreciate the level of cricketers that you're playing with. So, you know, where the majority of the team is quite new to the game, and, you know, and obviously we're not on the younger side of the teams, but we're still fairly competitive. And, you know, as long as you go out there and you give it a go, I think that's all you can ask for out of the team.
Absolutely, because it's, as you say, it's a young section of a well-established club, and why not? The fun, ultimately, is the thing. And we've had this tremendous, I don't think explosion is too strong a word, Tim, really, in women's cricket.
Yeah.
Andy was telling me that Aussie were five down for about 120.
Yeah, well, we're just following it on the screen, and they're, the Australian women at the moment, 177 for six, they need 41 runs to win from 12 overs, so...
That's likely only to go one way, I think. It's been, I've already said this once tonight, Maz, but to me, the development and proliferation of women's cricket in the last 5 years has been the best thing that's happened to the game in that time. I think it's absolutely brilliant. And to see the Anya Shrubsoles and the Lottie Edwardses and Catherine Brunt becoming household names and faces that you'd recognise on a quiz table, you know, when you get the photo round on the quiz. And equally so, Alyssa Healy and Delise Perry and Meg Lanning, you know, recognisable faces.
Yeah, well, Meg Lanning played at the cricket club, or still plays at the cricket club. I played back in Australia.
Okay.
Unfortunately, it was just after I came over, so I've never actually.
How long have you been in England for?
Too long. 16 years.
All right. Okay. I thought you were going to say about a year or something.
not quite lost the accent. You'd pass for an extra on Neighbours. it's interesting. Ali Mitchell was on social media early today saying that she was in the same hotel as Meg Lanning's parents, and what absolutely lovely people they were. Mum does most of the talking. but that's Ali Mitchell for you. So it's not even been a qualified success, Maz. It's been a real success.
Yeah.
And ladies, both of you, where do Outward Blazers go from here?
I think it just keeps growing for me. I think it's very significant that a lot of schools now actually switching to girls playing cricket. So a couple of the local prep schools actually now have girls playing. That's their main summer sport. So I think it's really going to grow. We've actually got the All-Stars happening at Outwood as well, which is the sort of junior academy, and have got the girls team within that. So I think it's only going to grow.
Yes, Rob was talking about just these initiatives when he was with us as chair of the East Surrey Colts League, which we were saying so far plays mixed cricket at those very junior levels. It would be good to think there might be a girls' league emerge from this, wouldn't it?
I think it's inevitable, isn't it, with the amount of, as Rob said, during the league, they're getting more and more girls playing. I think it's inevitable that they'll end up with a separate league.
I tried heavens hard, you know, my good friend Lizzie Mitchell on the staff at the grammar school for all these donkey's years now, and quite an accomplished cricketer herself. I tried, I was still running the cricket then in the 90s, and I tried, come on Liz, let's, you know, Jim Grant's quite interested in doing something, let's see if we can, because we had a couple of Katie Davis and Amelia Pine were both Surrey County junior cricketers at that stage, but Liz wasn't going to abandon the rounders and tennis, which was the summer staple, and as you quite rightly say, Mary, now that England's won the World Cup, the rounders is suddenly at last taking a back seat.
The growth of the game really sort of come about in the last 10 or 15 years, because I know when I started playing back home 15 years ago, it wasn't really out there, and now, you know, the women's team is on par with the men's team, really. So
Do you go back to Australia much?
I do occasionally. I'm flying out tomorrow, actually. So.
My goodness, we're very honoured indeed that you should spend this evening with us. Thanks ever so much for that. Now, what about, is there in this day and age, ladies, is there still a place for the cricket wife, partner, girlfriend who bakes cakes and makes sandwiches and is involved in that part of club hospitality on Men's League Saturdays?
If you speak to the traditionalists, they'll say yes. But I think the nature of the way society is moving, it's probably not. You know, nowadays things are shared, like even in the household. So I think there's sort of, yeah, the girls are going to go out there and play cricket, and if the girls are playing, then the boys have to do their share.
So a lady with a Hard Rock Cafe tea is not particularly interested in the construction of the ideal cucumber sandwich?
Well, I'm still interested, but, you know, if I'm playing, I can't do it. So
Fair enough, too. Absolutely. That's proper equality rather than just virtue signalling egalitarianism, isn't it?
Exactly.
There's a difference.
Yeah, exactly right.
And I think it's working the other way as well. A lot of the men in the club and husbands and partners have been very helpful towards our ladies' team, helping with the umpiring and the coaching. So actually, I'd say within Outwood, it's working both ways.
Would you say that, I guess at Outwood, that the, would you say the sort of ladies section is growing faster than the men's section now?
It depends. The men's section is extremely strong at the moment. So my husband, who has played in the past for the first team, not that he's a standard of a first team player, but when they were short of numbers, he would stand in for them. You know, he's now struggling to get into the second team.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Because it's very, very strong at the moment. So, but in terms of pure growth, I would say yes. And I think by having some really good players like Maz, we're actually, and some younger players as well, it's attracting other people, because it's nice to be, you know, have a little group of people of your sort of standard.
Mm-hmm. It's the promotion of the All-Stars that's where the game's going to develop and grow. So if people that are living in the area come out to the sessions on Thursday nights, and, you know, the kids are going to get coaching, you know, you probably see me out there or a few other girls out there, then that's where the growth of the game's going to go, because these girls will say, well, okay, well, she's playing, so I'm going to go give it a go. Mm.
It just needs a catalyst, doesn't it? Once you have that catalyst, everything just fits into place.
And a huge number of our men's first team and the SLAM men's team are from the academy in the past, so it is definitely the way forwards.
Yes, I'm sure that's right. I mean, I've come across a number of them in their past lives before they went off to university. Of course, Outwood are leading the way again tonight, Tim. We've got our first ladies here on the front foot. The first team captain has been in. The second team captain has been in. The chairman has been in. They believe in sharing it around.
Oh, definitely.
Which again is proper equality, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt when we've had people from Outwood in, it's clear that the ethos of the club has meant that you know everything is growing there. Mm. I mean, you're blessed with the fact that it's a lovely ground anyway. Mm. But equally, you're blessed with the fact you've got people like you guys and others that have come in that have helped the club grow, and that's benefited everybody there, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's become, I would say, a real central focus of the village from a sociability point of view. I think the new pavilion and with so many from everybody being involved, it's actually got a huge percentage of the village is actually involved, as well as the outsiders that come in.
Yeah, to an extent. I think it was always quite a tightly knit village club, and there were always people from the village. I mean, I'm going back a long, long way now, and there were always people from the village, but mainly centred on the Donkey, the Castle Inn, in those days, when Jeff Murby was the landlord at the Donkey, and Jeff Last was to be found propping the bar. Geoffrey and I, great friends, go back a very long way as umpires and cricketing pals and so on and so forth. I actually did I did one game with Geoffrey as an independent umpire at St John's Leatherhead against Edward's Oxford. They were down playing Leatherhead on tour, and Geoffrey said, "You want to come and make up the numbers?" So we did the game together.
Nice ground there as well, wasn't it?
Spent a long, long time in, is it the Leg of Mutton and Cauliflower in Ashton Village?
That's right. Yep. Alan Mullally used to drink in there.
Really?
England bowler. Yeah, he's often seen in there.
Al Mullal. Yes. Well, there's a name to conjure with. Now, we're getting slightly off track. Let me come back to what Maz was about to underline and dot and cross. Tell us how anybody of whatever age might seek to get involved, either through Chance to Shine or any of the other initiatives, or just turn up at Outwood and say, "I want to play girls and women's cricket."
Well, we have on our Facebook page, if you've got the young girls that want to play, there's a poster there for the All-Stars, so they can see that training's on Thursday nights. You can reach out to us on all social media, so we've got Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. A message there will get a response fairly quickly. You know, the key, I think, at playing at Outwood is that it's fairly inclusive, so regardless of whether you've seen a cricket ball before or you're an expert player, everyone gets treated equally.
You just about left me behind at reaching out, but never mind. I do understand. And are all of those bits and bobs available through your website?
Yes, you can. Yep, through the website.
So that's really the first recourse, and everything else spins off there. Now, while you're here, is there anything else that either of you would like to put in the public domain over our airwaves? And more particularly, is there anybody back at the club who you'd like to give a mention?
Well, I think thanks to Phil and Laura for organising the interview. It's great to be able to speak about cricket on air. The ladies actually have a touring team from Nantes, I think, coming over, so they're playing Tuesday night out in Outwood, so if anyone fancies going to watch a bit of ladies cricket, come out and watch us. Yeah, it's been great.
I think it's also worth mentioning Paul Howard, who's the chairman of the club, who's putting a huge amount in, and there's a really good team of people which is really lifting the club, and it's a very good time to get involved now.
And is my old friend Andrew Norman keeping okay and fully immersed in what's occurring?
Oh yes, he's regularly on as an umpire, and then of course his son is the
well,
captain.
Yes, quite. Matt's been in the studio here with us. What's the old phrase? More power to your collective elbows. It's been wonderful to have our first women's representatives from any of our local clubs, and we do hope that you both, and perhaps Laura another time, will come back and see us. Is there anything at all that we've left out? Speak now or forever hold your peace. Mary Briggs, Mariana Maz Graham from Outwood via Melbourne in the latter case. It's been a delight to have you here on the front foot, and we look forward to hearing of many more successes, not just for Outwood Blazers, but for the club as a whole. Thank you both very much indeed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the final part of On the Front Foot for this July edition on a very warm summer's evening. My name's David J. Tim Bowling and Andy Tharp from Mogadore Wanderers joining me now. Susie Radio. Tim, how is that England Ashes ODI going on? Have you got it over there?
Yeah, I think England are about to lose, unfortunately. Australian women are currently 206 for 6 off 43 overs. They need Australia need 12 runs to win from 7 overs. So I think unless there's some dramatic collapse now, looks like Australia are going to win that one, I think.
And go 4 points to nil up. Yep. Gentlemen, there is so much that we could talk about. We could fill an hour of Henry's show from 9 o'clock, I'm quite sure. Andy, when Jim Grant was here last month, we talked a bit about the proliferation of other sports all through the summer, and I'll tell you something that struck me. Popped home to stick my head under a cold tap, grab a sandwich and come back, and I watched a few minutes of the West Indies-Afghanistan game as it was beginning to peter out, and I think at the end of the 45th over there was an ad break, and the advertisement was for LG televisions, and the opening line of the advertisement was, are you ready for the new football season?
You nearly swore there, didn't you?
I had to, yes, I had to bite my tongue, yeah.
Now, all credit to the Lionesses.
Yes.
You know, we've got the Open coming up. Mm. Wimbledon is on. I mean, Wimbledon and Henley are the sort of traditional upper-class pursuits. Always went kind of hand-in-glove with the Lord's Test, and they won't do that now because the Lord's Test isn't until August this time around. They'll be there for the World Cup final, mind. Mm. And then there's the Netball World Cup coming up. I think the thing that irked me alongside the TV advert is the fact that all of the news outlets, whether it's the Lionesses or whether it's the men's competition, just refer to the World Cup when it's football.
Yes,
it's
yes.
never the Football World Cup.
No, that's right.
And now, I mean, a bit more virtue signalling, we've got the Men's Cricket World Cup. Anyway, don't get me started on that, but our telephone correspondent, Jeff from Hawley, mentioned that he'd been explaining the laws of cricket to an American from Germany who'd come over to see the baseball at the London Stadium last weekend.
That was amazing that they had that. That was that an actual competitive baseball game?
It was
part of their whole league.
It was between the Boston Red Sox and the New York Yankees, and it was two regular season games.
Wow!
And they're doing the same next year with two different.
And
teams.
That's designed purely to try and get people interested.
I think they're just trying to raise the profile of baseball.
But Andy, as far as I'm aware, they don't normally play the sort of fourth and fifth choice pitchers, and Major League Baseball scores are not normally 17-13.
No, they're not. No, and I think in a way that's you could argue that that both teams wanted to do that to make it a spectacle, because a lot of games of baseball, and I've been to many when I lived in Seattle, are very, very boring. Now some might say that's because you're watching Seattle, Andy, but it's it can be a bit of a drag. But
what's the Seattle baseball team called?
The Mariners.
The Mariners, right? And did they play in the Old Kingdom? The same as the football. Yeah. Did that mean they sort of shifted the bleachers around a bit?
I mean, thankfully, I think the two seasons didn't really overlap. Mm. So with the football and the baseball, it was more if they were playing basketball, and then that could overlap as well. But now they've all got separate stadiums.
Yeah, I went there with your dad to see the Patriots play the Seahawks. Extraordinary.
Yeah.
Absolutely extraordinary experience. So there we have it. Baseball plus the Netball World Cup. Mm. Poor old cricket, World Cup or no, is getting squeezed, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a bit, isn't it? I mean, it's a shame. Unfortunately, the sports channels are trying to push their own sports, aren't they? But you can't blame the BBC, who don't have many sports these days, for pushing the women's football. It's always the problem when you don't have sport on terrestrial TV.
I don't have a problem if it's the Women's Football World Cup. Then obviously you want the nation wants to know, and you want to be able to support them. And as you said, David, fair play to the ladies getting to the semi-final. I thought that was a brilliant effort. What gets my goat up is that the football season, the Premier League season, starts in, I think it's the second week in August. Now, to me, that's still cricket season.
Yeah.
Football shouldn't start till at least September.
But not only that, it officially starts in August, but we get the whole build-up from now.
You turn on Sky Sports News now, and they have 2 minutes focused on cricket. The rest is all football.
The rest is Frank Lampard today. That's right. And, of course, the FA Cup final was always that first Saturday in May. Mm. Now it's the last Saturday in May, if you're lucky.
Well, of course, that was a real shame that stopped being the big focal point. But again, I guess that was the Champions League and everything else that came along with it. it. So
now I'm saying that cricket is being squeezed before we come to the World Cup, which obviously is our main focus between now and 9 o'clock. I want to look a little wider in the world. We talk quite often about Jersey for one reason or another. We've mentioned Jonty Jenner tonight, and Jonty has just been involved in the ICC Men's T20 World Cup Europe Region Final in Guernsey. And this was Jersey, Germany, Italy, Denmark, Guernsey and Norway.
Wow.
So if you're talking about squeezes, it cuts both ways.
Yeah.
Now, this qualifier now carries on October and November in the UAE, and that will determine the teams that qualify for the next T20 World Cup in Australia next year. And it started off with 62 associate member teams, 25 going through to regional finals, and the top 7 from there go to the qualifiers in the UAE to be joined by the top 6, that's to say 11 to 16 in the world, and the tournament host, which is the Emirates. In Guernsey, Jersey were cruising along, played 4-1-4, and they played Germany in the final match, and Germany were second in the table quite comfortably, and they duly beat Jersey, so 8 points each. And Jersey went through on net run rate. Germany's net run rate was 0.1749 and Jersey's was 1.802, and had Germany hit a 6 to win the game rather than a 4, they would have gone through. That's how close it was.
Amazing.
I was getting minute by minute texts from my old friend Ward Jenner, Jonty's dad, in Guernsey, and that is how close it was. So Jersey now join Papua New Guinea, Kenya and Namibia from Africa, 2 to be confirmed from Asia, and 2 to be confirmed from the Americas, North and South, plus Scotland, Zimbabwe, the Netherlands, Hong Kong, Oman, Ireland and the UAE.
That's a big step up, isn't it, now?
So it's not just a squeeze.
No.
You know, they are... a friend of mine moved to Abu Dhabi last year, and I'm just thinking, you know, October, November, bit of sunshine.
Yeah, it'd be nice, wouldn't it?
We've got winter warmth.
Haven't got on the front foot in November.
I was going to say, can't we get the Suzy Radio to pay for us to go and do a little...
little outside broadcast.
Yeah, from over there. Well, you fancy coming as a pundit, Andy?
You know, I would never say no.
No, I've been one. It's hot out there, but not as hot as it is in this this studio tonight.
The Germany team that played. I mean, I haven't seen the list of the players that played. I'm going to say presumably they were expats, and maybe that's a bit disingenuous, but were they mainly expats playing in Germany?
Pretty much without exception, in most of those sides playing in Guernsey, with the exception of the two Channel Islands, they are principally expat subcontinentals.
Yep.
Not exclusively, and there is, we've mentioned this before, haven't we, there is a Deutscher Cricketbund, German Cricket Association, and, you know, predominance of expat players or no, there's quite a lot of cricket played in Germany these days.
I like the fact that with these leagues is that often when people who are big football fans say to me, oh, well, there's only about 10 countries in the world that play cricket, and you can point them to this league and say, well, there's that entire world league of cricket, which is no different from England playing the Faroe Islands at football or Gibraltar at football. Yeah, these are obviously smaller countries, but they are playing cricket in these countries, and they've got a tournament going on, which would lead the best ones into the top level.
Indeed. It is not inconceivable that Jersey might one day play in a 10-team World Cup.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and as we know, in T20, you only need a couple of half-decent players in the side to really get you forward. Look at Chris Gayle and the West Indies side going back. You know, you only need a couple of decent players, and you can really push forward in that tournament.
Yeah, you look at the current World Cup and look what Afghanistan have done.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they were playing in the same league as Jersey three, 4 years ago, weren't they?
Indeed.
Yeah, exactly.
It was one of their first, if not the first, long-haul overseas tour for Afghanistan. Mm. And there was a TV documentary, and clearly it was, if not quite an out-of-body experience, an out-of-comfort-zone experience for the Afghans, in that wonderful little Channel Island. So there we are. You mentioned Chris Gayle. Time is pressing us already. teams qualified. England almost by the back door, but coming through in the end. And Pakistan have to beat Bangladesh by 318 runs tomorrow.
Yes.
Which on the face of it is pretty darn unlikely.
Isn't it the case that if they bat second, they can't win? They can only they have to win the toss.
If Bangladesh win the toss and say we're going to bat, that's it.
That's the end. And it's statistically, it's the end anyway. I have a sneaking shred of sorrow for Safar Azhamed, who suffered that absolutely ghastly warm-up bilateral with England, with Pakistan getting wiped off the park at every possibility, and then they whistled up Wahab Riaz and Shadab Khan and, of course, Mohammed Amir, two quality international left-arm quick bowlers, and the boot very rapidly went to a degree, at least, on the other foot, and they beat us.
I think we were we just weren't expecting that, were we? Let's be honest. I think we were a little bit too big for our boots at that point. I was hoping that would be our one and only mistake.
Loss. Well, I'm not, you know, Australia was always going to be a tough game. I think Sri Lanka was, you know, how we performed against Sri Lanka again. I think you could see the team were nervous.
Yeah,
they just didn't know, and I think that, you know, they've had a. Obviously had a chat after that game and said, right, come on, let's just go back to what we were doing, what served us so well, and I think you can see the difference in the last two.
There's no doubt, is there, that they are a much better side, not just with Jason Roy, but also with Liam Plunkett bowling in those middle overs.
Yeah.
Is it funny, though, we've reached this point in the tournament where finally we look like we've settled on our first 11, and it's taken this long, some would say years, to actually reach the point where we thought, yeah, this is the best side we can put out.
It's horses for courses as well, though, isn't it? It's 10:30 starts, its wickets prepared at the behest of the ICC, as indeed, I said this last month, the whole tournament, and increasingly so, has been an ICC tournament in England, not an England World Cup.
Well, you can tell that by the commentary, can't you?
I was throwing things in the...
I'm not alone on that then.
in the India game, I just think that, you know, virtually everybody else makes an effort to preserve some kind of balance in their their commentary. I mean, the Indian commentators, to me, might as well just use the first person plural and say we and us all the time and done with it.
But who's going to pull them up on it? Nobody. The Indian cricket board certainly aren't.
Well, because it's, to all intents and purposes, the BCCI are the ICC. They run the ICC. And, you know, all the graphics and the blimming sixometer and all, it's all straight out of the IPL. They want it to be the IPL. And on the TV coverage, I don't know what it's been like on TMS, but on the TV coverage, we've been spared the worst excesses of these ghastly disc jockey types exhorting the crowd to make some more noise and all of this rubbish. And it's just been this jarring note a little bit.
I know, but you can tell it's an ICC tournament when you look at some of the adverts that are on in the ad breaks as well, and you think,
yes, that's right.
Do I really need to know about a Peri Peri chicken shop in Slough?
Well, yes, but...
Redditch, come and get your chicken in Redditch.
But this is major sponsors of the ICC. Yeah. That's where the money to fund the tournament is coming from, and you can't knock
that. Do you know, the funny thing is, the first time I saw that one of those adverts being played, it reminded me when I used to go to the Majestic in Reigate, and they'd have Pearl and Dean adverts, and saying the curry house just down the 100 yards down the road, and we've now got Peri Peri chicken shop being advertised in Redditch in an ICC tournament.
But what have we learned about India?
They don't like chasing. I think if any team posts more than 280, 290, I think they struggle, and I think they've really got to make some decisions about Dhoni and how he bats. You know, you look at the England the last two games they've played, and
what was going on in that last game when they were batting out the overs? Was that purely designed to try and protect run rates, or
I wouldn't like to guess, but I think it was.
There is run rate protection, I think, has probably been paramount. I think you know, one or two very scurrilous people wondered what betting slips might be in whose pockets. In a game that was effectively dead, not for England clearly, but a game that was effectively dead. Leaving that on one side, because that's only allegations, clearly. I just wonder whether there was almost an element of Dhoni, I've done this before and I'm going to do it again, one way or another, I'm going to win this game, and I have nothing but disdain for the rest of the entire process. And he can't do it anymore.
Well, that's the point. If he's capable of doing it, then fine. But it was reaching the point where you think everyone's... I mean, I haven't been to any of these actual matches, but I imagine what ticket prices, I don't know, what are they, £80?
They're not cheap.
No, 150.
I'll say £150 then. People are paying to watch that. Now, fine, if Donny says, I'm going to do it, great, do it. And if you don't do it, even one of the, I can't remember, it was one of the commentators actually made the point, you know, if they can't do this themselves, they should stand aside and let somebody else do it. And it's terrible when you've got the commentators actually saying that. You know, you would never have seen Chris Gayle gone in and pushed a ball around for singles. If he'd gone in, swung the bat, he'd either come off for six or he'd been out, and that would have been the end of it. It was awful to see.
West Indies, your pick, Tim. Great disappointment.
Terrible. I mean, initially, when the tournament first started, I thought we're on here. I thought the West Indies are going to do well. I thought they're going to do... But I'm not sure what happened. It just seemed to completely capitulate. I don't know why.
They reverted to "we are chaotic West Indies,"
yeah,
didn't
yes,
they? Every which way.
I think their warm-up games didn't help, I think, because I think they had some success, didn't they, in their warm-up games where they pitched it short. And you mentioned, David, about the pitches. I think one of my biggest frustrations is you look at some of these pitches and some of the grounds that we're playing at, and we see them year in, year out. We know what they should be like, and they're not playing to the true to form.
Well, and worst of all, that pitch yesterday, I mean, we were exchanging texts. I was here on air and Tim was in the office and we were exchanging texts. You know, the wheels are coming off and all the rest of it. But when it got round to the review last night, very clearly, after about 25 overs, that pitch at the Riverside just died.
I think Owen Morgan said it in the post-match conference. He said, we noticed that the pitch changed after 25 overs. Now, whatever the ICC are telling these groundsmen how to prepare these pitches, you know, one of the beauties of going to these various countries to play a World Cup is you have to deal with those conditions. So when we go to the subcontinent and play a World Cup in India, you expect the pitches to turn. When you come to Australia, you want fast, bouncy pitches. When you come to England, you want green seamers, because that's the nature of the game and where we play.
Even at half past 10 in the morning, 58 all out. Okay, but point taken. So somebody said that MS Dhoni is in that Tendulkar position where he is undroppable until he makes the decision himself. Well, maybe not. Chris Gayle talking about carrying on, still wants to play test cricket. Can't last for 50 overs, never mind 5 days.
Well, at least at test cricket you can stand at set the whole day and not run around, but no, I think he's
shot his bolt in this, hasn't he?
I think it was a shame because the West Indies started well against Pakistan, and they bounced Pakistan out of that game, which was, I think, one of the reasons that we suffered, because we looked at that and thought, oh, that's what we'll do. By that stage, either the pitches had changed or Pakistan certainly had got wind of it, but that was all that West Indies could do for the rest of the tournament, start bowling stuff. And that's fine when you're bowling it on a pitch that's half decent, but they beat Pakistan at Trent Bridge. Other pitches did not suit that. Banging it in short, and it was just sitting up to be hit, and quite rightly the West Indies just started getting thrashed.
To a degree we've got away with Jofra Archer and Mark Wood, but that said, they've taken 33 wickets between the two of them.
They're the number one and number two in the wicket takers.
Mitchell Starc.
But the point is, it's been a long time since we've had that two genuine quick bowlers in tandem there, and you know, the fact is, you've got Archer and Wood now pushing each other, and they're in the press, obviously having some ongoing tournament between themselves as to who's bowled the quickest, who's got the most wickets, which is great. And it is, it's clearly pushing Wood, having Jofra Archer in that side. He's bowling noticeably quicker with Archer at the other end.
Anderson's done his calf again, bowling for Lancashire. Forward. So who knows? At Nottinghamshire, broad or no broad, nailed to the bottom of the first division. You just can't tell, can you, what's going to happen? So, looking back to finish on West Indies, they'd have actually done better to pick Kyron Pollard than Andre Russell, wouldn't they?
Yeah, exactly. And it's frustrating that could have been done, and I think they would have done better. And I know it's maybe it's me going back to the old days, but I just always want the West Indies in the semi-finals of a World Cup, you know. And I think you said it before, David, that rugby needs Wales playing well, cricket needs the West Indies, and it really disheartens me when I see the West Indies. You know, I support England, but I always have a soft spot for the West Indies.
I mean, it's disappointing how they've performed, and they'll be disappointed themselves, but I think there is still some hope there. Some some good youngsters coming through. That is it, Poonan, Pooran.
Yeah.
Looks useful. Hetmeyer looks useful. So I think there's some
hope
there.
Pooran's come out of it better than Hetmeyer, hasn't he? Batted very well in the last game. Not quite so much.
I think Pooran got 48 today against Afghanistan. Yeah. So
I think there is some hope there. But you're right, they have disappointed, and I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens tomorrow. Is it tomorrow when Australia plays South Africa, or is it?
Saturday. Saturday.
To find out who we actually do play in the semi-final.
Doubleheader on South Africa. Total implosion.
Yes.
Yeah, but then again, South Africa have been. It's not the first. excuse me. It's not the first time South Africa. hate to use that, but it's true. And unfortunately, whatever happened to them this tournament, it was just utter disaster for them. They just never got going at any point. Mm.
This time it's a side in transition, isn't it? Yeah. Four or five senior players all well into their 30s, perhaps not quite the quality coming through from underneath. Dale Steyn never got his last hurrah because of injury, and total.
I mean, for a long time in that, it looked like they were going to finish dead last in that league. Mm. And it was only because the West Indies really did collapse, and obviously Afghanistan didn't do quite what maybe the people had thought they were going to do, that South Africa are not dead last. So
credit where it's due to Bangladesh.
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt. I think, when they've got Shakib
Al-Hassan.
Wow.
Leading all-rounder,
amazing. Absolutely amazing.
And shown a few the way to go. Good cricket, and very experienced cricketer as well.
Yeah.
That's where I think Afghanistan have fallen down, in naivety more than anything else.
Oh, I think they lost more than the other team won to the games they played.
Indeed.
Which is a real shame, because they were.
Yeah, you can't really knock that. To be fair, they're in a big tournament, and as you said earlier on, who would have thought Afghanistan playing in a World Cup?
No, exactly. But I think I was shouting at the TV when they were playing Pakistan, when the skipper brought himself back onto bowl, and I'm thinking, why? Your spinners have.
That was total naivety.
Oh, it was.
And
it
sadly
was.
Got what it deserved.
No, David, you're right. It did, and they'll learn from that. And I think the next World Cup, if they do qualify, then they will be a much stronger force, because it's going to be. Is India next World Cup?
Yes.
So
New Zealand not really firing. Well,
New Zealand had a lot of the easier games initially, didn't they? At the start, and they may be flattered to deceive a little bit by getting those games out of the way. They weren't particularly great against us. I think that barring a miracle, they're going to qualify, but I can't see them getting through the semi-final,
unless of course Martin Guptill catches fire and gets a double hundred against somebody.
I mean, their openers have not performed at all this competition. And you look at, I was listening to TMS yesterday, and they were talking through the figures and thinking, it was surprisingly, because you think Guptill was going to score 50s and 60s quite regularly, and Munro would do the same, and they haven't.
No. Back to England briefly. Morgan hasn't particularly fired, bar that one orgy, and very interesting article you showed me, Tim, about Derek Pringle reckoning that Viv Richards' 189 at Old Trafford is still a better knock than Morgan plastering Afghanistan all over whichever ground it was. Extraordinary innings, nonetheless. I was in Hastings without a TV the day that Richards got that 189. Extraordinary innings.
Yeah.
And Butler has struggled throughout.
He has.
100 and a losing cause.
I'm not sure he's fully fit, Butler, still. I think he's struggling.
I think there is an element to that, Tim. But I think, one thing we can look forward to, I guess, as England fans, is that they haven't hit the straps yet, and when they do...
Indeed.
And the fact is, they're so strong in that side with batsmen, now that Roy's back in that side, and I think he's the complete linchpin of that team now, and Bairstow is totally freed up. When he's at the other end, you could see it when he was batting, when Bairstow was batting with Vince, what a difference. Put Roy back in the side, a completely different team.
In terms of linchpins, you've also got a tube of super glue who, even when he's not in nick, is still scoring at a run a ball and holding it all together, and that's Joe Root.
Oh, brilliant. Absolutely amazing. What a player. One of the greatest all-round players, T20, ODI, Test cricket, can do the lot, and would walk into any side in any format.
And I also like to say that Ben Stokes has had a very good four or five games. I mean, when we've needed someone to bat the overs,
it just seems much more mature now, doesn't it?
It does.
He seems to have learnt from mistakes he's made in the past, and obviously with what happened at the World T20, and obviously his personal issues, and he just seems a much more mature person when he's playing.
Complete vindication and rehabilitation. It must be all that running around that abandoned warehouse in the in the television advert that's done the trick. But yes, I mean, feel sorry for Saffron, feel sorry for Stokes, those 280s and a losing cause. Mm-hmm. And they are long on, yeah. Catch that.
Yeah. Well, Moeen Ali was, I mean, his performances have been not great, and justifiably he's been dropped. So.
Just like the last half dozen women's wickets this afternoon, long on.
Yeah.
No, never mind pushing 18 singles, catch that, and let's go home.
Yeah.
And they've lost now by 4 wickets, so not terribly good news. Well, a couple of minutes, or a minute and a half only.
Wow.
Where does the World Cup go from here, assuming that it's Australia v New Zealand and England versus India, second time around at Edgbaston?
Wow, it's got to be England-Australia final, hasn't it?
That would just be a perfect precursor to the Ashes, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I think we're going to win it. Honestly, as long as Roy stays fit, I think we'll win the World Cup.
I think we'll win it, and I'm going to throw a spanner in the works and say that actually I think we'll play New Zealand in the final.
Really?
I think New Zealand will. Wow. I still think they've got one game, and then Williamson's just a great player. They've got good bowling. It'll be interesting to see. I think I'd love it to be an England New Zealand final.
Yeah. Wow.
And England would be likely to shade it, I think, if it were.
I think whoever of the three that are in the semi-finals, I think we can beat all of them. It's just, you know,
we seem to be hitting our straps at the right time.
Take one game at a time, though.
Yeah.
It'll be a lot to do with how Stark and Cummins and Stoinis and co play against New Zealand, if it is New Zealand. Gentlemen, we've reached the finishing tape. Thanks for that last bit, because we've hardly scratched the surface of our list of topics as usual, but at least we have had a good look in some depth at the World Cup, and next time around, when Jim's in your seat, Andy, we'll know what the net result of all that is going to have been. To Andy Tharp and Mogadore Wanderers, always a pleasure, my friend.
Oh, thank you very much for having me again. It's been a pleasure.
And Tim, thanks for all the hard work that you've done in putting this together.
Oh, likewise, David, thank you.
And amazingly, that's 2 hours done and dusted of On the Front Foot. That was our July cricket chat show on Suzy 103.4. We'll be back at 7 p.m. on the first Thursday of next month, which is August, to see how everything unfolds. But until then, thank you very much for listening. Hope you've enjoyed what we've been babbling on about. And we will indeed see you in roundabout 4 weeks' time.